A closer look on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Sheila Logmanis here to give you a closer look at caregiving for those diagnosed with dementia, cognitive impairment, a guidebook for the dementia caregiver. I just spoke with the author of that, Dennis Wiseman. I've got the link on the show page. If you go to the show page on A Closer Look, first of all, click like so you get all of these important things I post for you in your feed. And that way you can also click share and pass it on through your social media network of other people who need to hear these things, need to learn these things and will benefit by them and pass it on through there. And exponentially, we've created a whole network of people across the country who are edified, who are encouraged, who are inspired, and they realize they're not alone. That message, you are not alone, is so important in what the gospel and what the popes have continued to remind us time and again. Be not afraid. My next guest is also my colleague here at Relevant Radio and good friend. John Harper is here. He's on the other end of the show today from his usual place as host of Morning Air here on Relevant Radio. John started in broadcasting media as a teenager, and both of us did when we were kids, John. And here we are, and he's thrilled to share his expertise in radio with the network that's helped him so much in his spiritual growth, he says, is how he puts it. But he's here to help you because John has more personal experience as well outside of radio in his personal life on this very topic of being the caregiver for a parent. And John, on that, continuing the conversation on being caregiver for someone diagnosed with some form of dementia, cognitive impairment, late in life issues, your story is so touching, and I don't even know all of it, of how you cared for your mom until she passed just, what, this year, right? It was just this year, not long ago.
October 12th of last year, so we've just passed the one-year anniversary. Yeah.
Okay. Well, tell that story. How long? What was her diagnosis, and how long did you care for her?
I cared for her in terms of taking care of her for the last 10 to 12 years, but she was very independent. And it was only in the last couple of years that the diagnosis of dementia was something that was very real and something that I had to deal with. And I don't have any siblings. I'm an only child. So with the help of some very good doctors and whatever I could, you know, feel and touch and find out, that's how I took care of her. And I noticed something happening with more confusion in the middle of 2015. Now, at this point in time, she's 93 years old, and I'm just chalking that up to age. But it was getting progressively worse and I'll never forget it. It was December 22nd, 2015, and it was time to go to bed, and I would always help her get into bed. And she was just a different person. I mean, saying, take me out of here. We've got to get home. And I panicked. I didn't know what to do, but I was able to calm her down a little bit to get her to sleep. Next morning, like nothing ever happened. But I called the primary care doctor and I said, hey, this went on. What should we do? And for those who take care of elderly parents, you know that something as simple as a urinary tract infection can cause those types of symptoms. So the doctor says, take her in for a blood test. Now, it's December 23rd. He doesn't have hours. And by the time he calls me back, the only place to get a blood test now on Christmas Eve is in the emergency room. Mm-hmm. So we go to the emergency room to get a blood test. And I mention to the emergency room nurse that she's got some symptoms of dementia. And in this particular hospital, and I'm sure other hospitals have the same protocol, what they do is they give a CAT scan, and it was in that CAT scan that we found that she had a very small stroke. So on Christmas Eve, there she is in the intensive care unit of the hospital, and there are doctors, neurologists from all over the place showing me photos, showing me the results of the MRI, saying we can drill here, we can do this, and I'm saying, wait a minute, time out. She's going to be 94 in a couple of months. I don't know that that's the best diagnosis. Well, to speed up the story a little bit, in praying the Divine Mercy Chaplet, which was a part of our daily prayer routine, in praying the Divine Mercy Chaplet, that's another one of the miracles that I certainly shared on Drew's show, because it was about 6 months later, in a follow-up visit with the neurologist, he said, I'm discharging you. I said, discharging us? Why? Is she fine? She said, oh, yeah, we just, you know, that last CAT scan, everything's fine. Everything's fine. It's perfect. It's perfect. But the effects of that one small stroke was indeed there, plus age. And so, you know, I noticed that she was not as communicative as she once was. Even though she could use a walker, she was relegated mostly to a wheelchair. We had a hospital bed in the living room of our home for about 2 years. So it was this whole new routine now that we had to get used to. And, you know, there were a lot of surprises along the way, as anyone who deals with someone who's got dementia, because for the caregiver, every day is kind of a new chapter. What's happening here? And you have to kind of figure it out on your own. Mm-hmm. And, you know, over a period of time with some great doctors, and as Dennis Weissman was saying, it's not an obligation, it's a privilege, it's a gift. And God helps you with some extra gifts to start thinking like a doctor, starting to absorb the information they've given you. And also to either head off a potential visit to the emergency room with something that you can do, or to know when it is time to pull that trigger and take that person to the emergency room for something that's a little bit out of the ordinary.
You know, John, I thought of you when I was reading Dennis Weissman's book, the guidebook for the caregiver of those with dementia, because he talks about the different families who have several siblings, but they kind of all don't want those duties. And it really does come to the one who has the empathy, the compassion, the patience. Maybe they don't even realize to what degree they already were born a caregiver, but they have that in them. And it's sort of, I think he made that point, that the person who does have dementia has actually, maybe that person before they're actually diagnosed with it, they have somehow chosen you. And so that is a privilege. It is a choice, but it's not maybe always your choice to do it, but then you fall into it and you realize how very good you are at it. John, I am so inspired and so impressed. I know our listeners across the country are as well. Talk about how that doesn't mean there aren't a lot of hardships. It just is a matter of overcoming them, because people need this inspiration of hearing hope and encouragement that you give, but you also must have struggled a lot.
Yes, because as you learn how to deal with someone who has dementia, and as you're learning the disease as much as they're carrying that cross, it's a learning experience for both of you, and you have to do that simultaneously. But as the caregiver, obviously get ahead a little bit. I heard Dennis talk about therapeutic fibbing. There was certainly plenty of that as well. And you also learn patience. And yes, I lost my patience with Mom from time to time because it just got terribly frustrating. But then you have to step back and just say, well, wait a minute, let me put my pride aside and take a look at what she is going through right now. That's our primary focus. And then also in conversations, and you can still have a conversation with her, saying, you know what you should do? And you would always approach it with that tone in your voice. It's like, oh, I've got an idea. What do you think if we take whatever's going on now? You know, it's difficult getting out of bed, and we've got the wheelchair going in and out of the car. So why don't we offer all of this up to God? This is a great prayer offering. And you present everything in a very positive way, and in a very optimistic way, in a very hopeful way, hope-filled way as well. That was something else that Dennis mentioned, because the last thing every single night, just before lights out, when I would put her to bed about 7 or 7:30, I would always go through many times what we were going to do tomorrow, you know, looking forward to what was going to happen tomorrow. And one of the things that she loved to do was to take a ride. And so we would always go on rides on Saturday and Sunday and go get a frozen yogurt. So I'd always say, "And are you going to buy me that ice cream cone tomorrow?" Yeah, absolutely. We're going to go out there and do that. Good. So that just became a part of the daily routine. And she would always say, and I don't even know where this came from, because it was only in the last few years, she would always say to me, "I love you to the moon and the stars and back."
Aww.
And I never heard that until the last few years. And so that's the conclusion of my prayer every single night when I pray for her soul and the soul of my dad.
Aww. That's so beautiful. Speaking of which, I hope you don't mind, and I think we talked beforehand, so I don't think you do, that you and I exchanged some emails at that time. I expressed my condolences and prayers and inspiration that I got from you, just seeing how you handled things, how you cared so much for your mom. And you said mom's credo for life was simple. Get out of bed, put one foot in front of the other, and use the gift God gave you to help someone else. You wrote me, I was blessed to grow up with that witness from mom and dad. That's yep. such a powerful message, you said, John, of simplicity and humility. Of course, you recognize the voice of John Harper, my guest here, my colleague, my friend. We're talking about being a caregiver for those with dementia. And John was for, did you say 10 years for your mom?
Taking care of her because, as she was going through her 80s, she became a little more frail, but still extremely independent and did way more than she probably should have done. Mm-hmm. But, it was always... I became that, and parents of newborn children and kids who are one or two will know exactly what I'm talking about here. You just say, what are you doing? What are you getting up for? What are you moving? You just do that right away. You remember that when the kids were growing up. You're just, wait, what's going on? And you're like this cat with its back arched, just ready to pounce. And, don't do that. No, sit over here. Don't do that. And, even when she was suffering with dementia, she would just say, would you stop it and sit down over there and be, I know what I'm doing. It's like, okay, because she would still set me straight up to the very last day.
Wow, that sounds like your mom was really strong, but the love you to the moon and back, that's so right. beautiful, because she knew deep in her being, John, that you were a loving caregiver, a loving patient, humorous one. Are you going to take me out tomorrow, mom, and buy me some ice cream or some frozen yogurt? I love that. That's giving her back her dignity of being mom who's going to treat her son to an ice cream cone or a cup of frozen yogurt. That's a beautiful thing that you learned on your own. That's in Dennis's book as well, things that you can do, like, there's this one place he talks about going out to a ball field where they've got the parent's mother with them, and she'd already fallen and broken something once on that ball field. So after coming out of the hospital, they were going to back to the ball field, and the wife grabbed her mother's arm, and the mother didn't want to. She had not remembered falling, by the way.
Right.
And so it's like, what do you do? Let her fall again? No, you got to hold her arm. But I can't believe how fast people can think of these things. But she quickly thought of an idea and said, hey, I got an idea, mom. Let's show everybody here how proud we are of our little ball player by mm-hmm. linking arms and going to the bleachers together. Oh, that's a good idea. I thought, wow, what creative thinking caregivers can have.
Yeah, definitely. And, we would go for a lot of rides, as I had mentioned. And one of the things that you realize, because when you care for someone with dementia, every day can be a slightly different variation of the previous day. And so mm-hmm. you learn a little bit more. And when we would go for a ride on a Saturday evening after dinner, one particular Saturday, I needed to get something at the supermarket. So she's sitting in the car and she enjoyed doing that and people watching. And I came back out and she's giving me this big wave from the car and I'm waving back to her. This is in the middle of 2016. And she said, a nice young man gave me a ride here. I'm so glad that you came out of the market. And I was like, oh, okay. But what that also was a trigger for me is like, okay, mm-hmm. let's do this every Saturday night. And that was kind of a reset where I would come out of the market, even if I didn't need anything, I'd just go in there and come out. And she would just say, oh, I'm so glad to see you because this nice young man just gave me a ride here and let's go home. Okay, sure. And so you have to play along with that storyline to a certain extent. And I made those same mistakes that Dennis was talking about. It's like, no, you have to do it this way, or no, you just said that. And you have to eliminate all of that. And that only comes with experience. And that's all trial and error.
Well, I'm sure you did a lot of that in all of those years. And it sounds like for whatever trials or possibly some errors, John, you really found your way. And now you're an inspiration to others. Another thing you wrote me in these email exchanges is after your mother passed and you had learned so much, you said to me, I'm praying now to the Holy Spirit to guide me now on how to use this skill set of caring for the elderly, especially those with dementia. I feel that I need to share these new skills God has helped me hone in the past years. You're doing that here today. You're doing it all the time. You were on Drew's show telling this story. Mm-hmm. In other places, you tell the story and share. But everyone hearing you today is moved by your inspiration, your hope, your encouragement, your positive attitude, and the love that just comes through everything you say about taking care of mom. John, we have a call from Susan in Phoenix, Arizona. Susan, thanks for calling in. Go ahead right now. I'm glad you called. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Yes, I just wanted to, my comment was when I was in it, I was my mother's caregiver, and I didn't realize at the time that, you know, this is a gift from God to take care of her, and until later that she has passed away since. And I just wanted to mention that when you're in it, it's really difficult sometimes to see that this is truly a gift. And I realized later that God was asking me to walk the cross with him in taking care of my mother. She did not have dementia, but needed a lot of care. And I just wanted to mention that, boy, if I was kind of prepped, like maybe reading these books and these guests are wonderful, I would have been more prepared. And it wasn't until later I realized what a gift that God truly gave me in taking care of my mother.
I know exactly what you're talking about, Susan. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And did you notice, Susan, in taking care of your mom, that you not only became a caregiver, you became a care warrior in that you would do anything to make sure that she was as comfortable as she could be and that she was getting the proper medical attention, whether you were at a doctor's office, if you found yourself in an emergency room or in a hospital room. You know, it got to the point, it was a funny thing that happened, Susan, when the neurologist discharged my mom, he said, and you're a doctor, aren't you? And I said, no. I said, it's a survival skill from hanging around here too much. But by the same token, your heart breaks for someone who doesn't have a passionate caregiver like you, Susan, who can't stand up and speak for your mom. And you know, you can easily get lost in the system that way.
Yeah. Very, very true. You said it all. And I went to the neurologist as well, and my brother and I took notes, and, you know, just it was a lot of being there for them and not always accepting everything that they said. They also wanted to operate on my mother. She was almost 80 at the time, and we just had to really take a time to think it over.
Right.
And they just
right.
assumed we were going to go forward. So, yes, thank you for all your comments. They're really spot on.
Thanks, Susan. And you know, at those moments, that's when you see the Holy, you know, you really do see the Holy Spirit at work instantly when you get to those very critical moments when the doctor says operate or not operate. And you pray to the Holy Spirit. Those are prayers that get answered instantly. God bless you, Susan. That's great. You know, Sheila, you were mentioning how in that note that I sent to you, it's like, I've got these skills. What do I do with them? Mm-hmm. And it's interesting how God puts you in certain places. This is last July 4th. I'm at Mass at my parish. And it was a 10 a.m. Mass. It was one of those Masses, the only one they had on July 4th. I'm in the line going to communion. And I would say there are about 150 people in the congregation that day. And I hear a little noise in back of me. And I turn around and there's a gentleman, I would guess to be about 75, who is now on the floor of the church. And he had just, I guess, fallen backward. He was not hurt. But everybody was having difficulty picking him up. But it only came as learning this from doctors and nurses, how to properly pick up an elderly person. So I was able to pick him up. And then what you do if you're walking behind them is you put one arm under one of their arms. So, you know, their arm is locked in yours. And then with the other hand, you hold the top of their trousers. And so that's the stability. So I walked him down to the communion rail. He said, no, I'm fine. I got him back to the pew. Fast forward a couple of Saturdays later, I'm praying after Mass, and there's a tap on the shoulder, and it's this man's wife who said, oh, thank you for what you did for my husband. As it turned out, he lost all feeling in his leg, and that's why he went backwards. And I said, took him to the doctor, and he's having a surgery in the base of his spine at Yale New Haven Hospital up in Connecticut. And it was like, is it going to be okay? Yeah. Well, fast forward another month, another tap on the shoulder. It's that man saying, hey, I want to just thank you for what you did a couple of months ago. And now when I, every time I'm at we're at the same mass, he comes over, just does the tap on the shoulder. We just wave, talk to each other for a couple of moments. How you doing? And everything like, but that just came from learning how to pick up someone and everybody else struggling. It's like, oh, I can pick this man up and just walk him down and get communion and bring him back to his pew. I didn't think twice about it, but it was, you know, that one of those gifts that the Holy Spirit gives to you where you can say, okay, now put all of what I taught you into action.
That's right. And I'm so, having the inquisitive mind I have, John, first of all, I see that as a beautiful, the circle of life, if you will, the beautiful dignity of life. You gave that man his dignity. You also, you are now connected with him in his life,
right,
and his wife. And it's a beautiful thing. But the inquisitive mind I have is, what is that special way? I've actually been at a couple of masses now where someone went down during the mass. And so, of course, everybody rushes over and you do want to hurry up and at least help them up off that floor. But you say there is a special way to even help them up. And then what you described was, once they're on their feet, the ways you hold them up and stabilize them.
Right. And you can use that. Yeah, you can use that same method where you, you're going to squat down. They're on the floor. Mm-hmm. You're going to squat down. And then you're going to use one of your arms almost as a scoop underneath their armpit. Put the other arm behind them, again, getting them by the top of the seat of the pants, and then bring them up. That other arm that goes behind that person is the stabilizing influence. So also, if they don't have their balance and they go backwards, you catch them. You can cradle them so they don't go down again. Plus, you have, when you lock arms with someone, doesn't make any difference what their weight is. That's pretty firm foundation. And it's funny, I went to, in the last year of taking care of my mom, when I would just go to work out, I would ask some of the trainers, are there some exercises that I should be doing to actually physically lift a person here? Because, you can lift 110 pounds in a gym, but 110 pounds of a human being is completely different.
And yet you learned those skills. And I know in our exchanges back when mom passed, I said, God gave you the special gift of learning how best to care for other people in advanced conditions of weakness, dependence, and need just by caring for your mom. And you said that as well. And you said that, I said, I learned that from my dad as a child throughout life, because he volunteered and did work in, you name it, any number of homes, for the adult blind, the adult cognitively impaired. And I was a child at his side going to accompany him. And so I learned with dad. And then you put those, then I became, in the beginning, when he was in assisted living, before he had to go to a nursing home, it's the beauty of, family. When he was in assisted living in Massachusetts, I was his primary caregiver up there for years. But then when he had to go to a nursing home in Ohio, my sisters are right there and they stepped in there. So we all got to be a part of that. And that's the beauty of life. John, that goes back to it being a privilege, right? And not speak to this while we still have time, and not just a duty, an obligation, but a privilege. Speak to this, because this really, really gets me. And I want to do anything I can to help dissipate this, to get rid of this idea. It's the idea when people say, I don't want to be a burden. John, that feeds right into the euthanasia movement, the assisted, the physician-assisted suicide movement, what they call it, all sorts of things, physician-assisted death. But it's the idea put in people's minds in any state. I don't want to be a burden on anybody. What is your answer to that? I don't want people to ever feel they would be a burden, and yet people say that and they feel it.
My mom never said that, but I've had other family members who said that. And I say, well, so that means you don't want to be a gift? You don't want to share your life anymore? And they go, what? Good. What? I said, yeah, your life's a gift. Look what I've learned from you. And I would just remember things. And I'm saying, you don't want to share that gift anymore? And they would go, oh, okay. And I was able to share a lot of this with the three of my cousins who took turns every single day taking care of their mom who had dementia, who just passed about 4 or 5 weeks ago at age 92. And there are all of those struggles of who's doing more, who's not doing enough, or, those who are angry with her. And I'm saying, look, these are all normal emotions that you go through. But, just thank God for the time that you have with her, and, just have fun with her. Make her laugh. mm-hmm. you know, just, you know, stimulate, you know, stimulate her mind, you know, whatever mm-hmm. state it might be in for someone with dementia. Yeah, there's a lot of stimulation there. And I found that my mom in a social setting, she was a very social person. In a social setting, would just come alive. You would never know if you ever saw her in a room full of people that she had dementia. Well, so I would always look for those opportunities to get her into a social setting. Well, and because it was therapeutic for her, and it was a little bit of a break for me.
Of course, it's a break for you, and it lets her be on, if you will, in an element that she loves so much. You, of course, you know the voice of John Harper. He's the host of Morning Air on the earlier end of the day. For a lot of you who are driving at that time, you're driving again and saying, wait, I know that voice. It's John Harper. And he's been here telling his story about giving care. So we're talking about caregiving for those with dementia. He did it for his mom for so many years. John, we don't have time to get into it. What we thought we might just, like, you know, poke into a little bit, the USCCB meeting this week. But I want to tell you, and thank you for so much for your coverage. And listeners out there, tune in to Morning Air for the great coverage John is giving the USCCB meeting. John, I guess the bottom line is, of course, there's always hope in every situation, and no matter what in our church, no matter how dark the times, always right. Our church has the light. But you're doing such a good job, and you've heard about the vocations are growing from some vocations mm-hmm. directors. You've heard bishops reporting in from, and Father Rocky's there. You're doing a great job.
Thank you.
I'm sure you have hope of what will come out of this.
Tremendous. And as seminarians are saying now, these young men who are going into the priesthood, we want to be a part of the solution. And that's something that everyone who's hearing our conversation right now, Sheila, can say, to be a part of the solution in building the church going forward.
Amen to that. There are enough people part of the problem. We want to be a part of the solution and build the church going forward. John Harper, it's always a pleasure. Let's talk again soon on a closer look. Thank you.
The Relevant Radio studio line is sponsored by Catholic Order of Foresters Life Insurance. Employment opportunities to become an insurance agent and information about their flexible premium life insurance plans available at relevantradio.com/Forester.